This episode of the Side Hustle Project is brought to you by FreshBooks, cloud accounting and invoicing software for freelancers, solopreneurs, and side hustlers. I've personally used FreshBooks as my go-to invoicing software since day one with my freelance business, even back when I was freelancing on the side of my day job. And as my business has grown over the years, so has FreshBooks. You can now create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds, accept online payments from your clients, and much, much more. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to listeners of The Side Hustle Project. To claim your free trial, just go to freshbooks.com/Ryan and enter The Side Hustle Project in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome to The Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. Throughout this season, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from unique side hustles. In today's episode, we're chatting with Gabi Dalkin, the food blogger extraordinaire behind What's Gabi Cooking, where she has more than 275,000 followers on Instagram alone. Gabi is a machine at what she does. She's created more than 1,100 recipes on her blog, is a published author of her first cookbook, Absolutely Avocados, and has done collaborations with companies like Williams-Sonoma, The Food Network, and many more. Gabi started blogging back in 2009 on the side of her main gig as a personal chef for families in Los Angeles, including some time working for Jessica Simpson, which helped propel her career big time. In today's episode, we're digging into how Gabi got started in the world of food blogging, including the very first time she got paid to do a sponsored post and how that came about. We talk about her time working with Jessica Simpson and how she landed that job in the first place. We're covering how she built an Instagram following of more than 275,000 people and why that's been one of the best investments she's made for her business. Gabi also offers up her single best piece of advice to people who want to start a food or lifestyle blog today. We're covering all of this and much, much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Gabi Dalkin. Gabi, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
All right. So I've got a warm-up question for you.
Okay.
What book are you reading right now, or what has been your favorite recently?
Oh my gosh. Well, I just finished writing my cookbook, so I was kind of obsessing over this book called The Flavor Bible, which goes, it's just a cookbook basically, but it's not, it goes into all these different incredible flavor pairings and what goes well with what. And most people read novels. I just read cookbooks.
Well, I think that speaks volumes to who you are and what you do. So that fits for me. Okay. So you started your blog, What's Gabi Cooking, back in 2009 after graduating from college when you decided to go to culinary school. Can you take us back to those days and tell us about what you hoped to get out of the blog then?
Yeah. So I graduated college in 08, moved down to Los Angeles, and just started the blog totally on a whim. I had enrolled in culinary school and I wanted to kind of blog my way through it, and it was really just to brag to my parents back home about what I was learning how to cook and eat and all these different things. And it really very slowly started to snowball after the first couple of years. But at first it was literally just, you know, that my mom and my grandma were reading it.
Right. Which I think is common. Like, so many people get disillusioned or, you know, sort of frustrated with the fact that your readers are essentially your friends in the early days, right?
Yeah. And now none of my friends probably read my blog. They're like, we know what you do on every other platform. We don't need to blog.
So, all right. So pretty quickly after you start your blog, you go to culinary school, you get a job as a private chef, right?
Yes. I was a private chef for two families in my private chef career. One was a family in Malibu. They had, you know, his mom and a dad and four kids. So I was cooking. I learned very quickly how to cook basically everything because everybody had different dietary restrictions and preferences and all stuff like that. And then after I was there for 2.5-3 years. And then after that, I cooked for Jessica Simpson and her family for a couple years, which was incredible because she eats exactly how I eat. So it was like my dream job. And then I left private chefing entirely as soon as my first cookbook came out.
All right. So real quick, let's talk about Jessica Simpson. How did that happen?
Yeah, so she had heard about me. You know, they have like these domestic agencies down here in LA where they place like nannies and chefs and assistants and all that kind of stuff. And the woman who owns this incredible agency called me. She's like, I think I found the best job for you. Like, you'll love this client. And I went in and I interviewed, and Jess and I totally hit it off. She's actually the most incredible human, like so kind, really takes care of everyone in her life. So yeah, she was great. I love her.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. So then would you say that working with Jessica helped propel your career in any way? And if so, how?
Yes, I do. Because when she was pregnant with her first daughter, with her only daughter, she was on Leno and he was talking about, you know, like, what are you craving? And she said she was eating a lot of these slutty brownies, which is a recipe from my website. And I was watching this, like, I don't stay up late enough to watch Leno usually, but I stayed up to watch her and she didn't tell me it was happening. And my website broke because so many people were trying to get the recipe. It was like a very exciting moment in my life. So that definitely helped people know who I was. And, you know, slutty brownies is still one of the most popular recipes on my site. And then shortly after that, I left. And, you know, the blog really, it took a long time to pick up steam. Like, I've been doing it since 2009. So what's that, like 8 years? Mm-hmm. I would say probably in the last 3.5-4 years, I've really hit my stride. But before that, it was definitely a slow roll.
Do you remember the first time that you got paid to do something because of your blog?
Yeah, I do. And it was for a brand that I was like, I shouldn't have worked with, but they offered me like $50 and it was not on brand. It was for like pre-made frozen French fries or something like that. And I just wouldn't do that in real life. Like, I would make them. And they paid me like $50 and gave me like a $25 gift card. And I remember calling my parents. I'm like, I've made it. And they're like, we're still paying your rent. I don't think so.
And this was to do, say, like a sponsored post and promotion for them?
Yeah, this was like back in the day before Instagram existed. So it was just a sponsored blog post and like a tweet or something like that.
Okay. I like that. So if you can remember back this far, how much percentage-wise or dollar amount would you say in income you were making from your blog while you were doing personal chef work?
That's a great question, and I'm kind of upset. I'm a numbers girl, so I know the answer. So I would say, I was probably making 1/3 the amount of money on my blog that I was making as a private chef, and so as that number matched my salary from a private chef, albeit like I was freelance and it wasn't consistent, that's kind of when I was like, this makes sense. This is financially secure enough for me to at least make the attempt to do food blogging full time.
Yeah. And I would say that's actually a pretty meaningful percentage breakdown already. So how did you get to that point? Like, what would you say your income distribution was? So you had sponsored posts going. What other sources of income?
Back then it was just sponsored posts and banner ads, which is really interesting because I was making a decent amount of money on banner ads. And, you know, that was 8 years ago and my traffic has like gone up exponentially, but I don't make as much money on banner ads as I used to because people just aren't paying for, like, that's not the way to get that's not the way to get your message across. I think brands really want to hire someone to tell a story about their brand. So I think banner ads are less important and less, you know, you're making less money off of them because of that.
Okay. So how about with the site in particular then? So I don't want to get yet into books and food products and things like that, but were there any other income sources rather coming from your blog? So say like affiliate marketing or doing commercial shoots that came from leads who came to your blog?
I didn't do affiliate marketing up until recently. So that wasn't a part of the blog back in the day. And I had done a couple like satellite media tours for brands that didn't necessarily live on my website, but it came because of the blog. But that was like few and far between. I did like one every 18 months or something like that.
Okay. So were there any other early partnerships or guest posts, interviews, collaborations that you'd say helped accelerate the progress of your blog?
No.
A lot of hard work on your end?
Yeah, a lot of hard work. And I will say, back in the day, you know, when Twitter was still a place where people had very active conversations, I think that was helpful to be involved in the community. Like, I met a lot of food bloggers. We would chat, like, throughout the day on Twitter, and then we'd meet up at food blogging conferences and kind of, you know, networking amongst ourselves and spreading the word. Like, you know, if I did a collaboration with another food blogger, I'd be like, check out this blogger. That was a little helpful in the beginning.
So when did you then make the leap to full-time blogging?
So the full-time blogging came right after I left Private Chefing, and when it really started to make a decent income is when I was making, you know, a fine amount of money. And I was like, look, I'm making all this money, but I have no overhead. Like, I work out of my home. You know, I'm not paying anyone to help me with my social media. I'm allowed to invest some money back into my company. And I ended up hiring my two best friends, Matt and Adam. Matt's a food photographer. Adam's a food stylist, to take over all the images for my site. And that's really when the blog took off, because I think people eat with their eyes, and it allowed me to focus on what I love to do, which is developing recipes and networking and, you know, interacting with my readers. And it allowed Matt and Adam to really develop my, like, they understood what I wanted to stand for and what my brand was. So then they could help develop the visual voice. So all three of us kind of coming together is what propelled the blog to where it is now.
I love that. And I think that's a really important lesson for people listening, is that you want to do what you can to outsource your, you know, quote unquote weaknesses, or at least the things you don't like doing, so that you can focus on putting your time and effort into what you are best at, right?
Absolutely. I mean, when I shoot, I'll shoot something for my blog if I'm in a pinch, but, you know, it'll take me 4 hours to cook it from start to finish and shoot it, and then I have to edit it. So there goes like almost an entire day. Whereas opposed to Matt and Adam, when we're down at the studio shooting, we can get through like 10 to 12 recipes a day, because they both have teams and we're all like a well-oiled machine at this point. And they, you know, we just kind of like pump through. So it's just a really efficient way to run a website.
I like that. So you're a numbers girl. Did you hit a specific dollar amount inside income from the blog that justified making the switch? Or was it more of like a gut feeling that this is kind of the right time?
It was actually a gut feeling, which is very unlike me, because I really like to live and die by a spreadsheet. But yeah, it was just kind of a gut feeling. And, you know, I just thought, no one was doing that. That was like, a few bloggers have since like hired people to help with their photography and stuff. But I really wanted to differentiate myself. And I thought that was a great way to do it, because I could really focus on my voice. And if they took the visual voice and matched it with what I was saying, that made sense to me.
So now you have this blog and you're starting to dabble in other potential sources of incomes, you know, talking about book deals, things like making your own product lines. What came next after the blog? Like, what was your sort of your first big break into another type of business?
The first big break was my first cookbook, which came out in 2013, and it was called Absolutely Avocados. And it's a very like kitschy, gifty book. It's, you know, 80 plus avocado recipes. And I met with an editor and he was like, what do you want to write about? And I very much jokingly said, avocados. And he's like, that's a great idea. We're going to buy it. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, I better come up with 80 avocado recipes now. But it was an incredible experience. And I'm very proud of the book. Like, the recipes are spot on. We tested them, you know, 6+ times before they went to press. So the book was the first big thing. And then after the book came out, I got a lot of opportunities to work with bigger brands for bigger paychecks and, you know, just like a year-long sponsorship or an ambassadorship. And then I started working after that with Better Homes and Gardens as a contributing editor. So I had a column in their magazine every quarter, and I did a lot of bigger campaigns with them. And after that, let's see. it was a lot of just like focusing on the blog, continuing to grow that. And most recently, I've signed another cookbook deal and I came out with my own line of products with Williams Sonoma.
Hey guys, this is Ryan. I want to really highlight what Gabi just said about her first book deal and how that led to an unpredictable number of awesome collaborations and new opportunities for her business. Oftentimes, when you look at someone like Gabi who's already made it in many ways, it's easy to get overwhelmed. You start to say, well, if I want to be as successful as she is, I need to write a book. I need to blog every day for a year, post 2 photos on Instagram each day, and keep my Snapchat story up to date because, well, that's what Gabi does. But you can't compare where you are now at the beginning of your journey with where someone who's been doing this for 8 years is today. The reality of working on your side hustle, whether that's starting a blog, teaching courses, consulting, writing a book, or otherwise, is that your time is a very limited resource. You have to squeeze in working on your side hustle around your day job that keeps the bills paid. And if your ambition is to eventually make it to the top of your industry, that makes how you choose to spend your limited amount of time extremely important. You have to find that one thing that's going to give you the highest return on your time investment, what'll help push you closest to the top. For Gabi, that real game changer was her first cookbook. What'll it be for you? Up next, after this short break from our sponsor, Gabi and I are talking about each of those incredible opportunities that came her way after getting her first cookbook published. Stay tuned. This episode of The Side Hustle Project is brought to you by FreshBooks, cloud accounting and invoicing software for freelancers, solopreneurs, and side hustlers. As you know, I personally use FreshBooks to do the invoicing for my freelance business. And the reason why I've stuck with FreshBooks for so long is because I hate dealing with the accounting side of running my business. I'm just not a numbers person, and I'd rather spend my time doing what I do best, which is getting results for my clients. And that's where FreshBooks really comes into play for me. Their completely redesigned suite of tools range from invoice customization to analytics and insights that show when your clients are actually viewing your invoices. The ability to easily take upfront deposits for new projects, accept online payments, and much, much more. Getting started is extremely simple, even if you're not a numbers person. Actually, especially if you're not a numbers person. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to listeners of The Side Hustle Project. To claim your free trial, just go to freshbooks.com/Ryan and enter The Side Hustle Project in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome back to our interview with Gabi Dalkin. We were just talking about how Gabi's first cookbook really elevated her brand and started changing the game for her business. Now we're diving into everything that's happened since, including her new product line with Williams Sonoma, her upcoming second cookbook, and more. Your first book deal was really a major tipping point for your business then. How did you land that deal?
So, you know, at the time I was in my like early 20s and I really wanted to be on Food Network. That's like all I wanted was a Food Network show. So I was very like, whatever it takes to be on Food Network, I'll do a cookbook. Sure. I wasn't really as strategic as I should have been. But that's okay. I actually just had a conversation with someone who is a really great mentor to me last night. And she's like, just because, you know, we were talking about doing a TV show. She's like, you don't have to find the TV show to start. You just have to find something that is on brand for you and that can grow into something else, which I think relates a lot to my first book because I was very much known in the food blogging world as the girl obsessed with avocados. So that's, you know, it's true. Like I still am, like I eat an avocado every day. So that's what kind of, I didn't shop around. I just had an editor that I really liked. We were friendly outside of work. He was very well connected in the food blogging world. And I found him. I found my agent. I signed the paperwork and it was a done deal.
So once you published that first book, then what did you do to make sure that it was kind of a success? Did the publisher do a lot to help you with that? Or were you sort of using your own audience to drive book sales?
Yeah. So my publisher did not help a ton with press. I think it's not very common for them to send people out on book tours anymore. So I took it upon myself to promote the book because, you know, it has my name on it. So I partnered with a brand. I worked with California Avocados and we planned, I don't remember, probably like 5 to 8 influencer events up and down the West Coast where I would bring other bloggers in. We'd have this big, beautiful lunch featuring avocados. Everybody would get a copy of my book. This is when Instagram was like just starting. I think I had like 1,000 followers. and people would, you know, help promote it and blog about the book. And I continue to push it to this day. Like, I'll still talk about it on my Snapchat or on Insta stories or something like that. But that's pretty much how we got the word out. And then I had also hired a publicist at the time. So they got me on a lot of morning TV shows and national radio and some magazine placement, which was also great.
One of the things I really admire about you is how incredibly engaged you are with your followers on Instagram, Snapchat, and otherwise. So you respond to comments, message back and forth all the time.
Yes, thank you. That's my favorite part about my job. Without everyone reading my blog, there would be no point. So getting to be in people's kitchens with them and helping them, you know, troubleshoot a recipe or, you know, watch them cook for their little 2-year-olds and like get them excited about guacamole or cookies or whatever that is. Like, that's why I do my job.
Would you say that you've experienced a positive return on your time investment on social media?
Yes, particularly Snapchat. I find that a lot of bloggers in general or people that run websites, their traffic has kind of plateaued in the last 2 years because people are consuming content on Instagram and other applications. But I think since I started on Snapchat, I think people really feel like they get to know me better, and my traffic has doubled on my website, and I can't really explain it any other way other than Snapchat and social media.
Right. So even on like something like Snapchat, where you can't necessarily click through to someone's website, like maybe they're going offline to Google search for your blog or find a recipe that you mentioned in your story.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think establishing that connection is so important because these people are my friends. Like, I've never met them, a lot of them in real life, but they're like, I'm cooking for them. Like, I want to make their lives easier in the kitchen. So, you know, having that connection through Snapchat or Insta stories and them trusting me to go to my website and use my recipe and spend $30 on ingredients or whatever it is, that's invaluable to me.
Do you have any tips then for someone who's, say, just getting started with their blog or their Instagram or their Snapchat related to food? How should they go about building sort of that first community of, say, 100 or so followers?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is about connecting. So maybe it's just your friends reading you to start. Like, you should be responding to every comment and going out and commenting on other people that you admire and establishing relationships with all these people, because that's your industry. Like, those are your coworkers per se. You know, running a food blog is very, like, you're alone a lot at home. So having those connections to people online and interacting with them, and even if you take the conversation offline or to like DMs or whatever, I think that's really important in making people trust you and making sure they come back.
And you recently launched a line of, I'll say, delicious salsas from Williams-Sonoma. I've tried all of them now.
Thank you.
I can imagine food products are quite different than running a blog. What would you say has been the most unexpected surprise or challenge with getting that salsa into production and out on the shelves?
Well, working with Williams-Sonoma has been incredible. They're like the best partner I could ever ask for. And they are so good at their jobs. The production side of it wasn't that hard. Like, I developed all the, I mean, at least for me, it wasn't. Maybe someone internally at Williams-Sonoma, whatever. But I developed all the recipes internally, sent them to Williams-Sonoma. We sourced a production facility that makes all the salsas, and we got samples and we adjusted recipes as needed. So they're perfect, because I'm a little bit of a salsa snob and I want to make sure they're, you know, everyone's going to enjoy them. But I think the most surprising thing to come out of that, like, I had never done any in-person events before with readers and followers of the blog. And so being able to go around to like San Francisco and Newport and San Diego and here in LA and meeting What's Gotta Be Cooking readers has been like the most rewarding thing I could have ever imagined. And I can't wait to keep, I like want to just do them for fun. That's so fun to hear people's stories about my recipes and their lives and how, you know, this one girl made my lamb chops and her boyfriend, now fiance, proposed to her afterwards. Like, it's super cool to hear those stories.
So when I'm hearing you talking about what you do, I pick up on so much love and enjoyment. Are there times when what you do does feel like actual work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work working with brands. I feel like I'm working because like we go back and forth on creative and we're really like making sure that I'm getting the brand messaging across, but we're not interfering with my brand messaging. Like, I'm really particular about who I'll work with. And that's a lot of conference calls and explaining and, you know, trying to educate both sides. But I love that part of my job. So I guess it is work, but it's still fun. Like, I was a marketing major in college. So I think, you know, I like to bring that part of my life into my job.
All right. So Gavi, I've got a few quick, frequently asked questions for you. The questions are intentionally short on my end. Your answers do not need to be equally as short.
Okay.
What kinds of sacrifices have you made over the years in order to put enough time and effort into your business and particularly getting traction with the blog as you were on the side of your personal chef work?
I would say I'm a pretty social person, but when I'm really in it, like if I'm doing a big blog campaign or a book or something like that, social life, you lose a little bit of it.
Understandable.
Unless everybody wants to come over for dinner, which not everybody always wants to come over for dinner. So.
Now, what's been the best investment that you've ever made in the context of building your blog or your brand? And that could be in the form of time, money, tools, products, services, anything.
I will say the best investment was hiring Matt and Adam to do my photography and food styling. Like, I can't even put a price tag on that. It's one of my most favorite parts of my job is being in the studio with them. And it's really taken the blog to the next level because I have images that are, you know, just as beautiful as images you would see in a food magazine. So that was far and away my best investment.
All right, Gavi, my last question for you. What single piece of advice would you give to someone who wants to start a food blog today? What should they focus on?
I would say, because I didn't do this for the first 3 years and I really wish I would have, figure out what it is that you stand for, what message you want to share, what you want your story to be, and make sure it's authentic. And then go for it. Like, I find a lot of people are scared to start a blog or whatever they're trying to do. And, you know, I think there's something to be said about just jumping in head first and figuring out what your voice is. And then you'll grow and develop along the way, but you got to start somewhere.
Gavi, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell our listeners today where they can head to learn more about you and see everything you're up to?
Yeah, so thank you for having me. The blog is whatsgabycooking.com. Gabi is spelled G-A-B-Y. And I'm What's Gabi Cooking on all social media.
All right. Thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of The Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. And one more thing before you go. I want to give a special thanks again to FreshBooks, our sponsor for this episode of The Side Hustle Project, for making this possible. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial of their cloud accounting and invoicing software to listeners of The Side Hustle Project. To claim your free trial, just go to freshbooks.com/Ryan and enter The Side Hustle Project in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thanks for tuning in.